From the Rex Cinema, Berkhamsted, Dead Ringers.
You're watching Newsnight with me, Kirsty Wark. There are 9 million bicycles in Beijing. That's a fact. It's a thing we can't deny. More on that story later. Gordon Brown joins me now. Mr. Brown, what's your reaction to the departure of Liam Fox from the Tory leadership battle?
Oh, I'm delighted. I don't mind saying now, Dr. Fox was the one man I feared could beat me, but now the foolish Tories have thrown him out, and the reign of New Labour will last for 1,000 years.
Are you sure you're not just saying that to try and convince the Tories they've messed up?
No, not at all. Liam Fox scared the living pyjamas out of us in New Labour, almost as much as Ken Clark did. Oh, I was scared of Ken. I used to lie awake every night, trembling in bed, imagining I was hearing the soft tread of his scary hush puppies up my stairs. Now he's gone. Hooray.
But, Chancellor, clearly anyone you say is a real threat to you isn't really, or you wouldn't say it.
But what if I'm bluffing? Or double bluffing on my double bluff.
Isn't it true the man you really fear is David Cameron?
No, not at all. I hope they pick Cameron, or do I? He's the only one I fear, or is he, or isn't he, or is he?
Mr. Brown, could you give me a straight answer? Who are you afraid of the Tories picking?
John Major. Yes, we're very scared of him. Or Andy Pandy, the Raggedy Doll. All of us in Millbank are praying they don't make him leader, or, worst of all, if the Tories draw a smiley face on a paper plate, staple it to a broom handle and make that their leader, if they did that, they'd definitely win the next election. A paper plate on a broom handle, that is what we are afraid of.
Hello and welcome to You and Yours with me, Liz Barclay.
Only John Waite. Coming up on today's show, a wedding report which suggests that one in every two babies born in Britain will be either a boy or a girl. We'll also be discussing new research which suggests that sticking your head into a vat of boiling hot fat may be more dangerous than first thought.
But first, bird flu. The government this week urged everyone not to be too concerned.
A sentiment we fully endorse here at You and Yours. And of course we want you panicking wildly.
Absolutely flopping about like a salmon stranded on a riverbank as we stoke up the hysteria to never-before-seen levels. Joining us now from the University of Pointless Speculation is Professor Andrew Bonkers. Now, Professor Bonkers, what are you calling on the government to do?
Well, they need to overreact now, if they're to save us, Liz. Not only must they eradicate all birds in Britain, they must also burn all emu puppets and weather vanes. They must also cull everything with bird in the title.
Oh, excellent. Such as?
Captain Birdseye, Bremner Bird and Fortune, Dickie Bird. It's our only hope.
Fantastic. Now, so far, of course, no one in Europe has died from bird flu.
That's quite right. But what if we were to ignore that figure and instead just make one up? Like 5,000. That would mean that already 5,000 people have died from bird flu. How can the government just be standing by and doing nothing when as many as 5,000 people are already not really dead?
And will that made-up figure of death grow?
Well, it already has. There's 10,000 dead in my head right now. By the time PM starts, my imagination will have created millions of people who have either died or been turned into turkeys themselves.
So, is that a side effect?
Probably. There's definitely possibly, I'd say.
So, there you have it to sum up. Mummy will all grow feathers and be eaten on Christmas Day.
And tomorrow on the show, Post-it notes. Are they secretly spying on us?
My fellow Ann Widdicombs. Like many of you this week, I sat down with a box of popcorn in front of my TV set to watch a historic trial beamed live into my home. This was a chance for all the Iraq people, whether they be Sunnis or Shares, to see one of the world's most hated men finally face a jury of his queers. And as that unshaven, bedraggled, beardy individual entered the dock. All I could think was, my God, hasn't Michael Jackson let himself go? To think this was the man who once wrote Thriller and Off the Wall, wore that single white glove puppet on his right hand. Then Donald Rumsfeld came in and said that that was actually Saddam Hussein. Wow, Saddam Hussein wrote Thriller and Off the Wall? You could have knocked me down with a fender. So it's just a matter of time then before the jury acquits Saddam and he moonwalks from the court to be driven away to a party at his Neverland mosque. But don't fret. The jury's indecision will be challenged in America's highest court, the Oprah Winfrey Show. God bless Judge Judy.
David Cameron and David Davis have gone through to the final round of the Conservative leadership battle. This gives the rank-and-file party members a difficult decision, as each in their own way are quite capable of losing the next election. As part of our season of programmes this week, celebrating the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Trafalgar, Radio 4 has specially commissioned another unforgettable poem from the poet laureate Andrew Motion. It's read for us now by Sir Ian McKellen.
For a British commander, nothing could be harder than facing a Spanish armada. Fierce battle at sea, only one victor there will be. Lots of big ships. Looks like Napoleon's had his chips. Nelson's riding sky high till he gets a cannonball in the eye. It certainly would be tardy if I didn't shoehorn in Kiss Me Hardy.
Look at this rubbish. This must be the worst Turner Prize ever. I mean, just look, this is simply a collection of old mugs with pictures of the Queen on them and World's Best Dad. What is supposed to be meant by this? Is it satire? Is it a statement? No. It is simply a bunch of dirty old mugs. Lazy, 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 lazy. Or this bag of old garments. These baskets of soap and shampoo. This chocolate. What a load of trite rubbish.
Excuse me, sir. I'm afraid it's early closing today.
Is that some sort of postmodern statement, part of some preposterous installation?
No, this is a charity shop.
Well, then I'll just take the egg cups and the pictures of the dogs playing snooker.
Westminster Cathedral.
Oh, good, good, good. It's Mr. Blair speaking. Everything, you know, all right?
Pardon?
It's just about... What does one have to do? What is the procedure? Just about, you know, sort of getting a sainthood. Really, because maybe I was sort of coming up, you know, ready for one.
Oh, you know, I think you have a long way to go. Usually sainthood comes up after death.
Ah, I see. I see. Well, I was just wondering, perhaps in my, you know, capacity, given that I'm Prime Minister, maybe something could be fast-tracked. I mean, you know...
No. The sainthood, it's a person who lives an exemplary life here on Earth, and first of all, there would be miracles... Have to be attested.
Well, we've had a few. You know, I think if you look back at our record in government, you know, there's been, you know, one or two.
What miracles have happened in government?
Perhaps one of the miracles that I'm still here. But I was just thinking, you know, Prime Minister, and then, you know, perhaps a sainthood whilst I was serving my premiership could be quite useful.
Oh, well, I wish you all the best.
Any procedure that I can be working on, you know?
No, not really, to live an exemplary life, as I said.
Right, well, I've done that. So that's the procedure. I couldn't get, you know, Gordon to countersign something and get the papers off to you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then you and the cardinals and the Pope could verify them, send them back,
that's
and then
right, that's
I can
right.
be appointed a saint then.
We'll do the best we can.
Beep. Good greetings to you all. I'm Stephen Fry, the stupid person's clever person. Welcome to this very special BAFTA tribute to a woman so cherished by the nation that we could cobble together 2 hours of dirt cheap archive footage, call it a tribute, and stick it on primetime BBC One. And we don't even have to pay her, because we're giving her an award. Ladies and gentlemen, Dame Judi Dench.
No, Stephen, stop. I think there must be some mistake. I had mine simply ages ago. No, I'm here to say nice things about Ian.
In that case, ladies and gentlemen, I implore you to shower adoration upon that superest of lovies, Ian McKellen.
No, I've got two of them already. One of my own and one I pinched off John Hurt when he was drunk. Isn't this Victoria Wood's due?
I don't think so, but it's worth a shot, ladies and gentlemen, Victoria Wood.
Oh, no, it can't be mine. I've had my award, I know, because I'm using it to weigh down a ball cock in my upstairs cistern.
Right, well, dearie me, I'd rather think we'll have to fall back on our emergency procedure. And Judy Poppet, will you do the honours?
Yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to this special BAFTA tribute to Stephen Fry.
Oh, you gorgeous lovelies, you shouldn't have.
And now, book at bedtime. Martin Jarvis reads The Russian Skylark by Cornelius Bright.
What?
Martin?
What?
Out loud, please.
Do I have to? Well, just once, I'd like to have the chance to read a book quietly to myself. Without having to do all the funny voices.
You can do that at home. You're on our time now.
It's not very good anyway.
Martin!
Well, it's not. I mean, look, I'll tell you what's happening. Christie's betrayed Ivana to Razlikov, and we've just found out that Castleman was the mole all along.
Well, now you've ruined it.
Right, so there's no point in reading it out aloud, is there?
I suppose not.
Good. Oh.
All next week in this slot, Zoe Wanamaker listens to the BBC CD of The Cherry Orchard whilst doing The Guardian Sudoku.
Hello, you're back with Today, where the time is just coming to the point where I tell Midweek to watch out. We're the show that does the pointless, abusive arguments. David Cameron has emerged from the cavalcade of freaks and geeks to become the front runner of the post of Tory leader. He joins me now.
Well, lovely to be here, John. Fluffy pillows, hot cocoa, soothing classical music.
Now, Mr. Cameron, your critics claim that you have little substance and that all you offer is charm and warm words like New Labour do.
Well, I hardly think, John, that you can draw any parallels between my easy-listening brand of modern conservatism and New Labour.
But you do seem in a funny kind of way to be rather a lot like Peter Mandelson.
Now, that's just plain ridiculous, John. Just because I speak in the same softly spoken, effete-soothing way as Peter Mandelson, that doesn't mean that we're one and the same person.
Well, you say that, but...
The very idea that I'm just Peter Mandelson with some cotton wool in his cheeks and who's parted his hair on the opposite side and who's infiltrated the Tory party so as to become their new leader is just silly. I don't know where you get that idea from, John.
Peter, there you are. What are you playing at? We agreed I could be David Cameron this week, and you could be David Cameron next week.
And now on Radio 4, we've a specially commissioned murder mystery, which sees the historic meeting of Radio 4's top detectives, Sherlock Holmes and Hercule Poirot.
I am afraid this time, Mr. Holmes, you are wrong.
I am never wrong, Monsieur Poirot. The evidence indicates that the man was killed elsewhere and the body placed here after the fact. Notice his hand turned slightly upwards, suggesting that at the moment of death, he was indicating to the waiter at the Savoy that he wanted another gin and tonic.
No, mon ami. What is significant are the ink stains on his sleeve. This proves that he was right-handed and could not have been a homosexual as his fiancée had claimed.
It is obvious we are not going to agree. There is only one way to settle this.
Godera, I hear you are in need of a detective.
Thank you. Heavens, you've come, Mara Motsway. I rang your detective agency because we have a great problem, and we do not know which way to turn.
Oh, it is good you have a complex and baffling mystery to solve. Complex and baffling mysteries are what I am good at. You might say I specialize in mysteries of not only much complexity, but also much bafflement as well. In fact, I have already solved this mystery, which I believe has been described as both baffling and complex at the same time together. This man who is lying on the floor, he is listening for elephants.
But he's been lying down there for 3 days.
Well, that is easy to solve. He has grown weary of listening for elephants, for there are few elephants in London. And he has fallen fast asleep with boredom. You can pay me now if you wish.
But Mara Motsway, given that he was struck repeatedly with a blunt object and his head removed, do you not think that he might just be maybe a little bit dead?
No. You see, as a detective, I notice a great many things. I notice that the wheels of the bus, they go round and round. And I have noticed that I am ethnic, and ethnic on a Radio 4 is always right. I have also noticed that unlike Agatha Christie or Mr. Conan Doyle, my writer would never burden me with any mystery that would mean it takes him longer to write a book than it takes a man to read it.
Well, I'm afraid this time, Mara Motsway, you're absolutely and completely wrong. Completely and utterly.
Oh, Mara Motsway, it is good to see you here. I was listening for some elephants.
Brilliant! Why didn't we deduce that?
Because you are not wise and clever detectives like me.
People of Britain, this is your Grim Reaper. This week, the spectre of bird flu finally arrived in Europe, with the World Health Organization warning that it's our children who are most at risk from this deadly contagion. And that is why I want those individuals who've put them in such danger to be severely punished. I'm speaking, of course, about Jamie Bloody Oliver. There, our children were happily munching their way at school lunch break through millions of turkey Twizzlers a week, safe in the knowledge that the Twizzlers didn't contain a single trace of the deadly bird meat. And what does the fat-tongued monkey-faced chump do? He only has to go and force every school in Britain to put fresh turkey on the menu. Well, why don't you just hold a loaded pistol to the kids' heads as well, you sadistic bastard. He knows what he has done. Why else do you think he suddenly fled the country to Italy in that bloody camper van? You can run, Oliver, but you cannot hide.
Good afternoon, Chris speaking. How can I help you?
A very good day to you, sir. Is that the gymnasium in Berkhamsted?
It is, indeed.
It is quite possible that you may be able to help me with my inquiry. I must say that writing my book has left me rather famished and exhausted, and I do think that probably it is time to consider joining the gym to increase my level of fitness.
OK.
Said the man delicately, with a sort of understanding that I found rather reassuring. What sort of equipment do you have in your gymnasium?
Well, the membership team ain't available at the moment, so if I can take your name and your number, as soon as they come in, I can tell them to give you a ring.
The membership team ain't available, did you say?
Yeah.
What a charming use of the English language you have. Words are strange, but somehow I understand the meaning. Do you have treadmills in your gymnasium?
Yeah, we do indeed.
I wondered, these treadmills, do they have something you can rest your hands on whilst one's induced in the physical activity?
Yeah, they do indeed.
Do they have a cake stand? If you don't have a cake stand, would there be somewhere where I could have a nice cup of Earl Grey?
No.
I don't like running pumps. I do find them rather vulgar and garish. So would I be permitted to perform exercise in my slippers?
Yeah, that's fine.
Do people do Pilates in this gymnasium?
No, they don't. The stuff that we do is multi-power milkshake drinks, all kinds of drinks, and lemonade, cokes, oranges, we've got bananas, fruit, anything, that's the only thing we do. We don't sell no fattening stuff.
No Earl Grey tea and macaroons.
No, not you and myself.
Well, perhaps you could come and join me at Mr. Pettiford and number 42 and we could have some tea and cakes of this type.
Well, that would be very nice of you.
And will you show me how to use the dual-axis above-shoulder press machine with added extra 1 kilogram addition weight for toning of lateral obliques and pectoralis major?
That would be no problem.
Rockin'.
BBC, Radio 4, I'm Charlotte Green. The headlines again. David Cameron's runaway success in the Tory leadership race has proved that allegations of past drug use are no barrier to holding high office. Which explains why Ozzy Osbourne has just announced he's challenging Charles Kennedy for leadership of the Liberal Democrats. And in other news, Saddam Hussein has appealed against the legality of the court conducting his trial and has demanded to be tried in the only Western court that lives up to his own high standards.
Silence in court, Judge John Deed presiding. Hereby and with to fore open the trial of Saddam Hussein. I'm the only judge that knows all the laws there are in the world and still finds time to be the salt and pepper sexpot all the lady lawyers love. Now, Mr. Hussein, have you anything to say? Or shall I just get on with sending you down for a billion trillion years?
Oh, sure. If you want to slavishly follow the dictates of the establishment.
What?
No, I quite understand. You have your career to think of. I can't expect a High Court judge to put the noses of Blair and Bush out of joint. No, no, you go ahead. Find me guilty.
I'll be damned if that's what I will do. If that's what the fat cats of the Old Boys Network want me to do, then I'll have to do the opposite. You see, that's the whole point of me, Mr. Hussein. I hereby find you very innocent indeed. But hang on, though. Are you using reverse psychology?
Yes.
Which, if you are, means you're not. Good, in that case, I find you double innocent and no returns.
Well, thank you, but isn't it usual for the jury to declare the verdict?
Not in my court. Judge John Deed is judge, jury and executioner, as well as usher, clerk of the court, and the man who gave the surprise witness a surprised look.
Oh, so I'm free to go?
Not so fast. I think you're forgetting I always have an astoundingly inappropriate personal relationship with someone in every case I try.
Oh, you gorgeous hunk of judge. I thought you'd never ask.
Hello and welcome to the South Bank Show with me, Melvin Bragg, the most intellectual Elvis impersonator in the world. Tonight we're going behind the scenes to look at the creation of 2005's most eagerly awaited stage show. I talked to the director, Vincent Cravat.
Well, Melvin, after the phenomenal success of Billy Elliot, the musical, we were very eager to come off that success and knew that there was only one logical way to go.
I joined the cast then for rehearsals of Fred Elliot, the musical.
Don't do this, Fred. You'll only make a damn fool of yourself.
I say. Deirdre Barlow, thou keep the spectacles and your turkey neck out of this. I say out of this. You'll not stop me following me dream. I say me dream. Folks said I'd never make it as a butcher, but I proved them wrong. I say wrong. Now they're telling me I'll never make it as a professional ballet dancer. Well, I say I'll prove them wrong all over again.
Let the wolf web go, Deirdre. We've all got our dreams. He wants foot dance. And I want to become the Northwest leading Barry White impersonator.
You'll have to kill me first, Ashley.
Fred Elliot, the musical, features all of your most loved Coronation Street characters and Ken Barlow. Desperate to ensure a great libretto, the producers immediately sought out Ben Elton, killed him, and then got Elton John to write it.
Well, it was certainly more of a challenge than Billy Elliot, but I think I've done the business.
I remember when Pop was found.
Me and Ashley making sausages and by the ton. Skin pigs and gutting them. But the biggest thrill we got was from a nice bit of tongue. And it seems to me Fred lived his life like a sausage tied on string. Serving customers with pork pies when they came in. And I would have liked some brisket, but Fred said he only had rum. Brisket sold out long ago, the corned beef never did.
And here we are at the musical's glittering opening night. Does the star of the show think it'll have universal appeal?
Well, of course it will, Melvin. I say, of course it will. I think we can all identify with a fat, middle-aged northern butcher who dreams of becoming principal dancer with Royal Ballet.
Let's head inside now to listen to the show's big finale number, I Say, I Say.
I say, I say. It were quite a tussle to dance like Darcy Bustle. I say, I say.
I say, I say.
But even though I'm light on my feet, I come back to good old Coronation Street. You see, I know that my roots are reed. And a tart, I'm a man who still sells dodgy meat.
A man who still sells dodgy meat. Sells, he sells, he sells.
You've been listening to Dead Ringers from the Rex Cinema, Berkhamsted. It was performed by John Culshaw, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry, Kevin Connolly and Phil Cornwell. It was written by Tom Jameson and Nev Fountain, John Finnemore, John Culshaw, Robin Ince, and it was devised by Bill Dare. The producer is Katie Marsden. And that was the last in the current series of Dead Ringers. But if, like me, you just can't get enough of the show, why not do what I do and start stalking the cast? Yes, us continuity people aren't nearly as normal as we sound, you know. I've spent the last 3 months camped at the bottom of Jan Ravens' garden. I built a shrine to Phil Cornwell in my bedroom from the contents of his dustbins. Freaky, eh? But I'm not the strangest continuity person we've got, though. No, the one doing the voice after me, now there's a weirdo.